But actually, every day you walk onto the set, it's incredibly stimulating and exciting. Every time you see what the new set is, every time you see a new script, every time you discover who the new guest star is going to be, every time you get to be Doctor Who, which is what happens to me. I go to work and I've got to try and be Doctor Who. That remains for me immensely exciting.
These are the Target Files, Doctor Who, Season 10 Reviews. Join us now as we discuss the final season of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor and Stephen Moffat as showrunner.
Hello, welcome to the Doctor Who Target Files season... I can't even say it. I'll say that again. Season 10 special reviews. This time we are discussing, broadcast last night in the UK around the world, episode 6 of season 10, Extremis, written by showrunner Stephen Moffat and directed by Daniel Netheim. This is Mike in Swansea, and over to my co-host for his initial thoughts on Extremis.
Hi there, this is Alex in Exeter. Well, Extremis, a bit of an interesting one. A really good concept, the fact that maybe nothing is real and everything's sort of being planned out. But maybe the normal Stephen Moffat problem of having too much going on. But I think it will work out, as we all know, this is part one of a three-part thing. So perhaps that will make more sense watching it fully as a three-part thing.
Similar to my thoughts, Al, I've overview to begin with. I said it's a mixture of elements right back to the RTD era, with Moffat's clever layering of storyline, very classily directed, good use of score, and we'll talk about the various themes and things at the moment. One of the major overarching themes from the last episode, the Doctor's blindness, Al, and I thought that was really reflected, particularly in the early shots. This episode was very much set in darkly lit sets, and that was representing the Doctor's blindness, I felt.
Yeah, that was really well done all the way throughout the episode, sort of light and dark thing, the whole thing to do with the Veritas, where, you know, it's the task of shadows. And I really like the whole concept of the blindness that the Doctor's going through in this episode, and it's really well explained. I agree, there's lots of good story in it, and there's lots of good plot. Well, I had concerns because it sort of was trying to do two plots in some way, I thought.
Yes, it really was sort of very sort of fabulous at the beginning, Al. Particularly the use of the Doctor being down in the darkness guarding the vault, and we've now found out, well, we haven't actually seen her, of course, but it seems to be that a certain Missy character is within that vault at the moment. And then we went on to the lecture theatre, which was also very cleverly enclosed in darkness, obviously out of lecture time in the day when we had the arrival of all the various pontiffs and popes and his staff. What did you make of those early scenes, Al, as well as going back to Missy when a return to the series for Michelle Gomez?
Yeah, I thought they were really well done, those sort of early shots of darkness and him not knowing who's in the lecture hall, and it's the very good actor playing the Pope, I can't remember his name at the top of my head, and all the sort of monks and that. And the costumes are fantastic, and you have to mention that in a bit more detail. And then we have the great Michelle Gomez back as Missy, and that sort of first line is brilliant. And I really like the bits of Missy in this episode, but I just think maybe that needed a separate episode to explain all that.
Yes, a slightly subdued Missy, you know, on the verge of being destroyed compared to her wackiness in previous appearances, but I thought Gomez did that understated sort of fear very well.
I still think there's little tones of wackiness for it, like, you know, when she's saying, oh, knock yourself out, literally knock yourself out, you know, and she doesn't want to be killed. And I think there's lots of sort of wacky comedy bits there, but she does the other side so well, I think.
Yeah, sort of very gothic, that scene, very reminiscent of the more sort of gothic nature of sort of modern comics and modern takes on, like, Marvel characters, something like a Thor movie, maybe. Sorry, a heck of a lot of influences in this story. I wrote quite a few down, Al. I've written down Silence in the Library, Doctor Who, The Da Vinci Code, Twin Peaks, a little bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, some gothic horror, gothic fantasy, as I just mentioned, the Fires of Pompeii episode from the RTD era, and the Doctor Who TV movie. Do you think that's enough influences for us to be chatting about now?
I think so. I was also going to throw in The Matrix.
Of course, yeah. Red pill, blue pill, there. Definitely,
yeah, the
end.
You know, the whole, well, we can't, is it a spoiler, really, if we say about, you know, the whole Nardal bit?
Yeah, well, I think we have to talk about the characters in inverted commas, don't we?
Yeah, because it's very interesting, that whole... I think he is, what Stephen Moffat said, he is a big video game fan. He does enjoy doing them when he's not writing tons. There's so many influences. I thought there was a slight Agatha Christie bit as well, with the, you know, the person who gets shot. There's just influence central, really.
Yeah, if I go back over those influences, the encyclopedia of influences I just mentioned. Silence in the Library, there was, of course, a library very prominent in this story, beneath the Vatican, wasn't it, where the Veritas was held? Sorry, Vatican inverted commas again. Yeah, so they had a sundial on the floor, very reminiscent of the design in Silence of the Library. The Da Vinci Code goes without saying, the idea of a hidden text, bringing sort of greater meaning to the idea of religion. Twin Peaks, I've been watching that show, rewatching the first two seasons originally, as it starts as we record this overnight in the US and UK and around the world, the third season after 26 years, there was various sort of David Lynch type shots from the director Daniel Netheim. A lot of sort of, I think they do it on computers nowadays, but the old effect of Vaseline on the lens to give it a sort of dreamlike vision and state.
There's lots of little shots like that when they sort of appear in the different buildings, really, I thought.
Yeah, that ties into sort of gothic horror, and that reminded me of Buffy the Vampire Slayer as well. Academic setting, the dark sort of tight shots within that series itself. Various reminders of horror, and the Fires of Pompeii with the Truth Monks, Al, very similar to the Pyrovillian monks that appeared in that story 9 years ago, which also featured a certain Mr. Capaldi, of course, didn't it?
That is true. Also, we must mention there's one bit that works is for Midnight as well, you think, with the synced number bit.
Of course, yeah, talking together, yeah, very, very well realised, Al. That, of course, was a more brightly lit scene set in CERN.
And I thought that bit in CERN was quite interesting because, you know, you didn't know if it was going to go into the Hadron Collider, which is there, which is a big sort of computer calculator, if you don't know what that is. And the whole fact where they want to blow it completely out, I thought was a very interesting theme.
Genuine tension and fear in that scene.
Oh, most definitely. I think more from, I think he's meant not to be tense, but more from Bill than Nardell.
Yes, genuine fear and tension in that CERN scene. Good reminder of the RTD era with the clock counting down, I thought.
Yeah, there's lots of nice, I think there is lots of nice references, definitely, to the RTD era at the moment, I think, in Who.
It's just the scale of this episode, isn't it? It used to remind you of those Journey's End type, Last of the Time Lord type episodes.
It's really, that's the only problem I have, it's a really big episode, and I think it gets a bit squished, but I think it won't do, because when you watch it as like part one of three, it'll make a lot more sense, I think.
Yes, quite a lot of chopping and changing, and we have the big setup for next time, of course, but we'll talk about that in a minute, Al. Could we mention some performances? I thought, you know, the last few weeks, 2 weeks ago, was Knock Knock. I thought that belonged to Capaldi, along with David Suchet. I mentioned last week I thought Oxygen belonged to Pearl Mackey as Bill, but I really thought Matt Lucas came into his own during this episode. I'll say Nardole in inverted commas again. He came across as very doctorish when he teamed up with Bill midway through the episode.
Yeah, I really like that because it seems to be, you know, well, the Doctor can't do everything, so we need to make another Doctor into Nardell, and he's really funny, and I think it is definitely Matt's episode this week.
There was that wonderful scene as well, as we flash back to the Doctor having to deal with Missy, and we both got a little bit caught out by the fact Nardole was covered up in a monk's robe, wasn't he?
We did. I was slightly tired at the time. I just come back from Chichester, and I was just thinking, I thought, that sounds so much like John Sims, but it must be Matt Lucas doing a John Sims impression. That's what fucks me.
Yes, listening back to it this morning, I think it was certain sort of depth to Matt Lucas's voice was very reminiscent, very sort of clear speech, very reminiscent of the John Sim master who we do know is coming back.
Yeah, that's what confused me, because it sounded very much like John Sim's voice. Well, I expect it's Matt doing one of his really good impressions.
Hopefully Sim will be turning up soon in an episode. It'll be great to see him back.
Oh, definitely, definitely. It'll be an interesting one, because we don't know where it's going to go. We know, they've announced it, that Missy is definitely in the next two episodes, so we don't know where it's going to go from there.
Yes, indeed, Al. One scene I want to talk about in particular, full of humour, but also something which, well, didn't greatly concern me, but seemed to step out of line with sort of modern attitudes, was Bill being on a date with a lovely lady called Penny, but it seemed to me that her foster mother was oblivious to her sexuality, and that seems to be a bit of a step back for the modern take on the series, Al.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I wondered what... Well, it's a good scene. It's quite fun between her and Penny. But I wondered what was going on there. Was it like Moffat had completely forgotten, you know, what he's meant to be gay when he wrote that scene? He might have rushed it, or it didn't seem right. You think, you know, she'd know if her daughter was gay or not. It's just a bit... It seemed a bit weird. I agree on that.
Yes, it didn't really have any need to be in there. Her mother, played by Jennifer Hennessy, previously appeared in Gridlock a decade ago.
She's really good, but I just didn't... Did you think... Is there a relevance to that we don't know yet? Or did you think the date scene needed to be there? It's like, I think because it's Stephen Moffat, and I think it's a good episode. Do you think there's slight bits that could have been edited?
I think the date scene was absolutely fantastic and worked in well the humour of the Pope appearing in the living room. But,
I liked it. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I thought it was funny, but I just wondered, did this episode need a little bit more tightening?
No, I just felt the need for her foster mother to appear again. There was absolutely no need in that scene. They could have just had the date and the Pope walking in. It didn't really add anything. Possibly a chance for Bill to have a bit of wit and humour by saying the joke was about men, wasn't it? You know, you don't know about my standards, how high they are. Something to do with that.
Yeah, that was
fair enough. Yeah, it didn't really need the mother in that scene at all, to be honest. It would have had just as much humour with the Pope walking in and Penny sort of seeing the TARDIS, a great shot. In the bedroom, the TARDIS with the three other priests, and she sort of runs out.
Yeah, I agree. I think in that scene, that was very good. Just need a little bit more editing on that one, I think.
Absolutely, Al. And another witty moment I loved was the idea of Pope Benedict being a female, and we saw the picture of her in the vault, and it looked a heck of a lot like Angelina Jolie.
I wondered if you were going to mention. Yeah, it did look very much like Angelina Jolie. I don't know what he's saying there, but that was very funny.
I'd like to talk also about the music as well. I've had a little read online of Gallifrey Bass and Doctor Who online. People have mentioned it reminding them of the James Bond score, or quite a few cues from James Bond films, but I thought Murray Gold borrowed a little bit from his own Sherlock theme in this episode, particularly the use of strings and violins.
Does Murray do show? I thought that was David Warner.
Oh, perhaps you mean, David Arnold. I think you may be right there, but it was very reminiscent of that, anyway.
It definitely had that feel to Sherlock. It had that feel, and I think the music did work well this time. Even with using the bits he's used before, I think where they were actually worked okay this time.
To ramp up the tension in the Missy scenes when she was about to be executed, there was a use of sort of heavy bass, almost like synthesized bass, and it was really sort of demanding, like a drum beat, yeah. It was really sort of tense, like a very... sort of whimsical drum beat.
It was good, but is that sort of, you know, to the whole the John Sims drums thing I think they were trying to emphasise there?
Ah, could very well be, Al. Very well noticed there, mate.
Because we've had bits, you know, like the knocking on the vault door now, it's all meant to be related to that, I think.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Alex, and this is Hughes News on the 21st of May. First things are the overnight ratings for Extremis. They improved. I think this is due to Missy reappearing, and they were 4.16 million, which for a Saturday night on BBC is very good. The overall appreciation of TV ratings last night on the BBC and everywhere was 22.7, and the highest so far Doctor Who has got this season. BBC Books have released a new hardback book of lyrical poetry, illustrated by Russell T. Davis and written by James Goss. It's to be linked with National Poetry Day in June. BBC have also launched a new video game. It's a 360 degrees game for the Time Lord. It's called a Time Lord Vortex. The video game is available to download from the BBC Taster website. BigFinish.com's website nearly crashed and melted down this Monday due to the fact that they launched the 10th Doctor Volume 2 Special Edition box set. This will be the first time that Billy Piper has worked for BigFinish.com. She is returning as Rose alongside the 10th Doctor. This special edition box set will be available from November as a CD in a Labyrinth box set book style, or as a single download. It's looking rather nice. A new main Doctor Who range at BigFinish.com out this week is with the 6th Doctor Colin Baker and his favourite companion, new companion Flip Jackson. It is called two separate titles, as again, it's two interlinking stories. It is called Vortex Ice by Jonathan Morris, and the second story, which is Cortex Fire by Ian Potter.
Okay, Alex, back to Extremis. I want to talk a little bit about the ending of the episode. Yeah, it sort of has confused a few people online. I've seen a few discussions. I just think Moffat layers these stories so well. And he does come up with a fairly simple solution at the end of this one. It has confused a few people. One or two people online had suggested how on earth the Doctor manages to send an email from within the creation itself, the simulation. The Doctor himself mentions in the episode that the monks created him so well that he's able to do that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a confusing one, isn't it? And I think it works because you'd still be able to send stuff, even, you know, if you're meant to be in virtual realities, you'd still be able to send emails and probably check your Twitter and Facebook. So that's probably how it does come out that way. But it's a sort of, I don't know if it's a sort of idea they got to the end of this episode and thought, well, how can we connect it to the next one? So we need to do this. But I think it does work.
Yeah, and it was set up just a few moments before by the Doctor talking to Bill, with the comparison of a character like Super Mario being able to delete itself. Quite poignantly, he said to the audience and to Bill, they've had enough of losing lives in their games, they delete themselves.
Yeah, I think that's how it's a good way of looking at it. It's not, I don't find it confusing. I thought it was quite a good way of getting to the end of the episode, really. But my only niggle was, you know, having this two different storylines working against each other, really. But I think by the time we get to episode 3 of the Monk trilogy, I think it will make perfect sense, really.
Yeah, so it'll surely be linked, and I'm pretty sure, even though she may end up having been in there for 1,000 years, Missy will probably be up to something.
I think what I've seen from what they've been saying about the third episode, the third of the trilogy, I think she will probably team up with Bill and they will have the Doctor, basically.
Yes, and another criticism I have read overnight online, the fact that Stephen Moffat has gone back to sort of virtual reality again, as he did in Silence in the Library, as he did a little bit with the idea of the Tesselector in Series 6 standing in for the Doctor who was shot at the lake. But my take on it is this, that, you know, I think the Doc within the series itself over, what, 54, nearly 55 years now, he's foiled so many plots to invade Earth that aliens need to make them more sophisticated. They need to make him think on his toes.
Well, I agree, because you see that bit where, you know, they go through his kill list and, you know, people have died around him, and it goes on for pages and pages and pages, and they'd have to be a bit more sophisticated to get round the Doctor. He knows every angle, he knows every trap, so I think the whole virtual reality thing works, and I think it's quite current, really, because virtual reality is, you know, going to affect our whole world eventually, you know, what they're saying at the moment, you know, the way it's being incorporated more and more in everything we do. So I think it's quite current and quite relevant, really. But it's the whole theory of other worlds has been here for years. You know, look at, as I said earlier, look at the comparison between this and the Matrix. It's the whole way that we like trying different simulations out. So I think it does work myself.
Yes, and the end of Series 8, of course. The, what was it called? The Nether Sphere, wasn't it? In Dark Water, Death in Heaven?
Yeah, where the Missy was uploading the dead to. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that was the same sort of concept, really.
Just want to mention one thing I'm concerned about, knowing spoilers, folks, so perhaps skip ahead by a few minutes in this podcast. Should we say two or three minutes, Al? I think I might start putting a timer on my phone us talking, and then... yeah, should we say a 2 minute spoiler warning, folks?
Two minute spoiler.
I'll just get the clock ready on my phone for this. Hang on just a minute. Well, we'll say 3 minutes, folks, shall we?
Say three minutes. That's probably enough to discuss with one.
Okay, spoilers ahoy, here we go. Skip forward 3 minutes starting now, folks.
No.
Okay, Al, my concern is the idea of a simulated reality. I know we're having fantastic returnees to the series, such as the Mondasian Cybermen, such as the Johnson Master. But are we going to get to episode 12 and Moffat is going to write it as a big simulation, as those characters didn't come back, as it didn't affect the Doctor's timeline? That's what I am now worried about.
That is a very big worry, because what I'm concerned about is the whole, have we been basically simulated since episode 1 with the pilot? Has this all been a simulation? And we'll get to episode 12 and it's like, oh, it's all a simulation, it's all fine, and we've done this whole big journey with the new Doctor, and it's not, and we don't get a new Doctor. It's all been a big ruse, really.
Yes, it's, you know, I suppose the reveal could be that it is the Doctor in stasis in episode 12, doesn't it? And would that sort of put the David Bradley rumours out the window? Would that put the idea, as I just mentioned, of the Mondasian Cyberman, the Johnson Master, just being simulations?
I think it'd just be a little bit, I don't think it could do it, but it'd just be a bit, people would just get there and go, well, we've just wasted 12 weeks.
Yes, you know, I think...
very interesting.
Possibly not the general audience, but I think fandom would see it as a bit of a cop-out, wouldn't they?
I think so. I don't think they could stretch it that far.
Yes, and as it's all sort of occurring, but the various rumours are, you know, Susan might be in there with the First Doctor, the Johnson Master could be in there in some capacity once it is actually open. We haven't seen it open yet, of course, but I can't see all these theories coming to fruition, Al, can you?
Not really, but I think quite a few of them were. But is it interesting what Stephen Moffat sort of confirmed it's definitely missing now? Was that just related to this episode, I reckon?
Yeah, well, all we saw was the Doctor speaking the word Missy when he had his head down against the vault early in
definitely,
the episode.
Definitely.
So
it's a weird one.
It looks that way, but I do suspect she's up to something, Al. Once she's out of there, she's either working on something within the vault itself, or once the Sim Master arrives, if it isn't from the vault itself, then they'll quite possibly team up, because Michelle has been interviewed this week and said it's going to be very dark between the two of them.
Well, we like that. We do like a good bit of darkness. Those two will be fantastic. No, I think she will, because that whole I'll be good thing didn't ring true to me.
No, she did. She did play the fear very well, but you do think she's up to something, Al. And we're down to the last 15 seconds now of our spoiler time. So,
what's else we mentioned? So we mentioned that. What did we mention? That. Do you think
5 seconds?
Do you think that the whole regen is going to be done in episode 12?
We're not sure. We're back out of it now, folks. We're back out of the spoilers now. Well, this is just a theory of ours. It isn't a definite spoiler, okay? I'm going to change what we just said. Alex has just asked a question. Al, do you want to repeat it?
I was just saying in the spoiler bit, well, do you think that we're going to get the whole regen at the end of episode 12?
Ooh, will we get it then? Well, you know, Peter Capaldi was interviewed, folks. This isn't a spoiler. He said himself...
He has said, hasn't he?
He said he had filmed his death scene, so... Whether that means we'll get a flashback at Christmas, I know. Oh, another spoiler, folks. Should I give this 30 seconds, folks? Give it another minute. But people I know who are at the Doctor Who Experience this week, and he spotted Michael Pickwood, the designer of the TARDIS, Rachel Talalay, who's directed many fine episodes in the Moffat era, in the Capaldi era, and a certain Mr. Chibnall was also in the not within the TARDIS set itself, but within the very large Studio 4 where TARDIS set
sits.
Well,
the TARDIS studio, it takes over a whole
thing. Are they planning Christmas? Are they planning a shock scene at the end of episode 12 to fit in very quickly now? It would be. What could it be, Alex?
We do not know. That's what's really good about this. We have no idea, really. Most people know quite a bit what's going on. They haven't got a clue, really.
Indeed, folks. So we shall keep our eyes peeled for this. Scores-wise, Alex, what were your overall thoughts and score on Extremis by Stephen Moffat, directed by Daniel Netheim?
Really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good episode. It had lots of good bits with the Doctor, you know, trying to work out what's in this Veritas, and then being sort of not completely there because of the eyesight bit, which was greatly done by Peter Capaldi, and having sort of Nardo and Bill take over most of the episode, I thought worked very well. There were some great different sort of shots in different places, like the Vatican and the Pentagon, and all different places around the world would look stunningly well shot. It had some good lines, it had some nice jokes, it had some really clever ideas going on there. It had, the only thing I could say complain about was the sort of two storylines sort of maybe crashing a little bit, but I think that'll be fine because in episode 2 and 3 of this month trilogy, I think it'll make more sense. Music was very good, so I'd probably give it an 8.5, I think.
Okay, Al, very good score again. Yeah, a good sort of mashup of RTD's epic scale and wit and Moffat's clever layering of the story, I felt. Excellent direction by Daniel Netheim. A lot of influences. I won't list them all again, as it took us about half an hour earlier on to do it. Very good characterization. Very good performances. Matt Lucas is a standout for me. I think I gave Oxygen a 10, didn't I? Perhaps a 9 for this one? Yeah, 9 out of 10 this week. Excellent. Excellent series so far. Really don't want any sort of lull, guys, so come on. Keep it up. I hope all these episodes are superb.
I don't think there's going to be a lull, because we've hit the lull spot of episode, this episode normally is the lull spot, and it was still really good. So I think we're okay this season. Next time on the Target Files Season 10 specials, we'll be discussing The Pyramid at the End of the World, written by Peter Harness and Stephen Moffat.
Contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter at DW Target Files, or on Facebook by searching for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast. Thanks for listening. Doctor Who Target Files Extremis Review featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbon. 12th Doctor theme composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by YouTube channel Veil Mystery. V-A-Y-L Mystery. Please do check it out. Newsround opening and closing themes composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra and by John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files Season 10 Specials Extremis Review was recorded in Swansea, South Wales and Exeter, Devon, England during May 2017.